Sean Tilly. My Radio 1.
From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1.
My Radio 1. Sean Tilly.
And it really is a legendary Radio 1 programme which reunites these two rascals that have joined me in the studio right now. Firstly, welcome Pete Drummond.
Hi, Sean. Hello.
It's very nice to have you, Pete, and Steve Blacknell as well.
It must be a pleasure you having me here.
Well, it always is.
It says here.
As it says on the script. Well, the auto cue in your case, of course.
Complete.
Chaps, welcome. Primarily, we're talking about the Radio 1 in concert days. But firstly, Pete, we can't have one of the original Radio 1 members here without talking about those early pioneering days of, well, I was going to say the 30th of September 1967, but your first programme was actually the next day. We've done our research here. Sunday, the 1st of October 1967, and it was Top Gear, and you were hosting it alongside John Peel. That was your first ever programme.
I know.
What do you remember about those days then?
Well, I remember that I was the main presenter for the first 6 or 7 weeks, and I had a different disc jockey with me, and they were kind of, you know, to try out, obviously, to try themselves out, and they were very trying for me as well, because my manager actually was Clive Selwood, who was also John Peel's manager, and he said to me, whatever you do, don't let him get a word in edgeways. I thought, well, that's a bit mean, you know, they only get one chance, so at least I've got 6 or 7 chances. Anyway, Tommy Vance took over.
Yes, but you did remain on the network. They sort of moved you to a Saturday slot.
I did a thing called Midday Spin.
On Fridays, which was a legendary programme. It'd been there since the
Life
programme.
How come you know all this? I mean,
because it's research, Pete, and well, you know it. Back in these days, you know, late 1960s, Steve, were you listening to Radio 1 and sort of aspiring to be a pop radio DJ?
You weren't old enough, Steve.
I was quite young at the time. We had a careers master, and he said, what do you want to be? I said, I want to be a disc jockey. He said, yeah, of course you do. Would you like to be a policeman or a teacher? And it was like that. So at the time, I thought, no way. I later became a dreadful disc jockey. I mean, absolutely worse. I'm a broadcaster, maybe, but never a proper DJ.
Now, the time is 8 o'clock on Radio 1, and that means it's usually time to hear a theme tune played by Frank Zappa, but unfortunately, we haven't got time for that today. So I'm going to just sort of introduce ourselves and say that we're here for an hour. We, meaning myself and Keith Stewart, we seem to be the only ones in the studio at the moment. But anyway, we've got lots of records for you and delightful things, you see, all sort of new sounds. So here's the first one. Comes from an LP called McGuinness Flint.
Let's talk about that Saturday evening show that you did, though, Pete, because by 1969, you were on a programme that they said you would be getting deeper into the music.
Well, if you're actually doing a programme with records, it was a bit of a shock because, you know, you're sitting on the Radio London out at sea and you're playing your own records, pushing your own cartridges in, everything. Now, there's a guy behind the glass. All you're doing is sitting there and introducing the records or whatever, but you don't have them with you because he's putting it on and you're giving him a sort of, you know, a wave to when to start the record and all that. It was very peculiar, I have to say, you know. But anyway, I had various producers, one of whom, who should be nameless, he was a bit worried about Dr. John, the Night Tripper. He said, we can't play that, Pete. We can't play it. It's too way out. And he started to cry. Literally, I promise you, he started to cry. I said, look, you know, dry your eyes. All right, we won't play it. Because he was worried that the suits upstairs would say, you know, what on earth was that, you know? Frightful stuff. Because, of course, they didn't really know much about music themselves. They were just sort of promoted into their positions and had a sort of, you know, knowledge of music, but not this stuff that young people like. And that's why they pushed out, you know, chirpy, chirpy, tweet, tweet or whatever it was, and dreadful records throughout the day.
Another middle of the road records like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They had quite a few of the old guard BBC producers that were still around, I guess, you know, people like Bernie Andrews.
And he was great.
Yeah.
Bernie was different.
But Bernie was a music man, wasn't he?
I mean,
he worked on Saturday Club with the Beatles.
He was really into it. And he was the guy who did Top Gear, who produced Top Gear. And, produced lots and lots of programmes. And then he thought he'd retire. I said, what are you going to do, Bernie? You can't retire. You're still only 30 years old or whatever it was. A little bit older. He said, I'm going to go and chop wood.
Bell-bottom blues composed by Eric Clapton off the double LP Derek and the Dominoes, which is called Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. And it's released on the Polydor label. In fact, it was released a week last Friday, to be precise. And includes, as you would imagine, a number of tracks featuring Eric Clapton on vocals, in fact, all of them. There's a couple that aren't composed by members of the band. That's Eric Clapton, Bobby Whitlock, Jim Gordon, Carl Radle, with Duane Allman from the Allman Brothers coming in and playing guitars. Played a track last week, actually, and I'm sure lots of you have heard the album by now in stereo and under the best conditions. However, if you haven't, I strongly urge you to do so, because they're a very, very tight band indeed, Derek and the Dominoes. And for a new band, they're doing awfully well.
And rather like Bernie, another legendary Radio 1 producer that you'd be working with in those early days was the man who eventually would be the brains behind the In Concert series, Jeff Griffin.
Yes, well, he was already there. He'd been
there since the early 60s.
Yeah. Jeff had, yeah.
But, thank goodness a lot of these younger producers were around, and slowly but surely they were having an influence on the musical sound.
Absolutely.
Of Radio 1.
Well, Jeff, these people were interested in the music, you know, as opposed to, John Walters, John F. Muir, stereo, John left one, F in the middle, Muir on the right. I think he's not with us anymore.
No, and so many of the great people aren't, of course. Sounds of the 70s, another very, very important show at this time.
It was, wasn't it?
Particularly as progressive
Bob Harris.
Pop and rock, yeah. But you became one of the presenters on that.
I did. I used to do a Thursday night. Very good figures we had.
That's the forecast. There'll be more news on Radio 1 at 9 o'clock. Thank you, Ryan. Now into the sort of second half of the programme with a single from Donovan, accompanied by Danny Thompson. And it's a little number posed by Donovan. It's called Celia of the Seal.
And this was kind of the music that you were getting into as well, Steve, but it was record companies how you initially got into the industry, wasn't it?
That's right. I was, after becoming a failed disc jockey, I thought I'd try plugging as a record plugger. So I wasn't the worst in the world. I had a few hits. I think the first thing we ever plugged was Music by John Mayer.
So we were lucky, so therefore we thought we were going to get
a bunch more hits, and ended up with two, I think, in my career. But there was a show called Riverside that was coming up on the telly, and Mike Appleton and all the Whistle Test crew invited me in, because at the time I was dressing up as a waiter. I was running a thing called Dial a Waiter, which was a ridiculous thing, going and getting drunk with corporate people and serving them and then getting drunk with them again, and they thought I'd be good for this part of the interviewee, and I walked away with this little job on Riverside. They gave me one show, and then we did 42 of them.
So have you shared the old Alison Tarley now?
Well, there's still parts. But I mean, this Alice now is the kind of person that you just don't want to mess with. I don't need to hang around with this Alice. You know, this Alice is very, very mean. But he's much more devious, also. You know.
So, how's the show different in itself?
Well, it's a sprint for an hour and a half, and I have more energy now than I think I've ever had in my life, and I don't know why, but it's the kind of thing where, like, I go on stage with the attitude of not the attitude of, gosh, I hope you like us tonight. I go with the attitude of, come here, and you shake them for the whole hour and a half. Yes, they haven't got a chance. I go out there with the attitude of, you don't have a chance.
And then it was Jeff Griffin, who was at I was at an Alice Cooper concert, and Jeff walked across to me and said, I've got the, do you fancy, I can't think who'd stepped down, maybe it was
Gary Crowley,
Greg,
I think it was
Gary.
Because he'd got a job at Capital.
That's what it was.
And now he's on Radio London.
Yes. Radio London.
Still here at the BBC.
And Jeff walks across and said, do you fancy it? I said, yeah, and he told me what the money was, and I said,
oh, no, thanks.
It was almost, and I think, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the fact. I'm allowed to say
yeah,
what
the
figures
are. Of course you are, yeah.
I think John Peel had actually just got the wages up from £32 to £40. So it was £40 for the Thursday at the Paris, okay? And then you went in, I think, on the Monday to do the trailer as well.
Now, may I just remind you, in case you've forgotten, that you're listening to Radio 1 in concert programme on the medium wave band and on the Radio 1 and 2 VHF network. That's 88 to 91 megahertz, and that's in gloriously coloured stereo. Well, our second band tonight, they came to the fore via seemingly 138 world tours with one Gary Newman, no less. So when he went solo, they decided to do the same. They promptly signed a recording deal with Rocket Records and had a bit of a hit with Love Needs No Disguise with Mr. Newman doing the vocals. And also they had an album for future reference, which people raved on about a bit. They are, in order of not preference, on keyboards, Chris Payne, on drums, Cedric Sharpley, and on guitar and voice, Mr. Russell Bell. Mr. Chris Payne informs us that his great-great-grandfather shot the man who shot Nelson. None of which I believe, but I hope you'll believe our second man of this evening, Dramatis.
But it was a show that was established. It was an important part of the Radio 1 weekend schedule. And your first edition of it was the 11th of November 1972, Pete, at 6:30. And the first acts that you ever introduced. I mean, it's fair to say that the programme had been going with John Peel and Bob Harris, Alan Black. But it was Mike Cooper's Machine Gun Company and a Welsh band that I remember very well being Budgie.
Budgie.
That was your first ever one.
Marvellous.
Yeah, and you also had people doing the programme as well, like Mike Harding. Not the Mike Harding famous for doing comedy folk. The other one who you'll remember
the
very,
one
very well.
The one who played guitar.
Yeah.
And worked on the BBC.
What are your memories of the actual recording process of In Concert?
Well,
how would that generally work
out? I'd introduce the band. It depends on the band. I mean, if they were, you know, not to my particular taste, I didn't need to actually sort of be there listening.
Where would you go, Pete?
Round the corner to the captain's cabin.
The captain's cabin.
Round to the captain's cabin.
Listeners, that's the pub.
For a half a pint.
For half a pint.
And then Jeff Griffin would say to me, where were you at the end? I said, well, you didn't need me to do anything. I mean, I don't say anything on air. He said, yeah, but the audience, you know. I said, well, they realised it was over and they'll be going home. Jeff, come on.
Jeff didn't mind.
No, he didn't.
Hello, this is Pete Drummond making one of his nowadays rare appearances on Radio 1, welcoming you to another In Concert programme from the Golders Green Hippodrome. This week features a band who've recently released their 14th album, and their very first number is from that 14th album. If you've got the LP, you'll know the number. It's quite a marathon with lots of changes, lots of different moods in it. Here to play it for you are the guests this week, the Incredible Spring Band.
And I'd come straight from telly.
Yeah.
And it being, for me, early 80s, it was very goth, and the makeup stuff. Yeah. I mean, I often would go into the BBC of a morning to go on breakfast time, and they'd take my makeup off so they could put me on the TV. There was so much of it. But I used to wear makeup on the radio. So I used to wear makeup on stage in front of the Paris. And Jeff said only you would wear makeup on a radio programme. But it was
yeah. For the audience.
It was for the audience, yeah.
And let's not forget that eventually it ended up on TV with Sight and Sound In Concert, didn't it?
It certainly did, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
How did you find that, Pete, the television side of it when that came in?
Well, looking at myself occasionally, so I see it come out, I did the wrong thing. I did the wrong thing. What you're meant to do is look at the camera.
Hello and welcome to Sight and Sound In Concert, which you can hear on Radio 1, 247 metres in the medium wave, on the VHF network between 88 and 91 megahertz, and of course on BBC Two in colour. I'm wearing green tonight because actually I've got nothing else to wear, but it's also the colour of Ireland, and we have a couple of gentlemen from the Emerald Isle as our guests. Later on we'll have Gilbert O'Sullivan. But to start us off, we have a guy who you may have seen recently on a Supertram tour back in the summer. He's now just started his very own tour about 3 days ago. Would you welcome, please, Mr. Chris DeBerg?
You know, it doesn't matter about the audience and everybody else who's in there. You don't talk to them. You talk to the camera. And I always spoke to the audience, so it looks a bit strange, you know. So I'm sort of ignoring anybody watching.
But that's actually quite tough, because I teach presenting these days. It's actually quite tough when you've got a camera and an audience. Mm. And you naturally go to the audience. But in fact, you know, that's infinitesimal to the millions at home.
Yes, exactly.
So it's actually quite tough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first of a new series of Sight and Sound In Concert. Coming to you this time round from Groovy Chippenham in Wiltshire. pressure. It's Gold Diggers Club. Okay, now let me remind you, we're coming at you on Radio 1 Stereo, VHF, and on BBC 2 Television. Okay, kicking off this series with probably one of the country's leading live bands. We'll be playing live soon, and watch out for their great new single, out on the 27th, No Stone Unturned. Okay, please give a warm welcome in sight, in sound, and in concert.
But it was very good. I mean, the I've just seen them recently. The people on Sight and Sound, Mike Appleton, Tom Corcoran, bless him, and all the team, all was up for a laugh.
Yeah.
And I was doing one time for Blancmange. And Mike Appleton says to me, Blacknell, before you do your piece to camera, just stand on this metal plate. And I'm thinking, what? Metal plate? Why? He says, just do your job, OK? So we're coming out, and I'm doing a bit. So for 3, 2, 1, off I go. And here's a band with a new single. Please welcome, and at that stage, Tom Corcoran, the director, comes right into shot and slaps a blancmange right in my face. And I'm peeling it off, I just say, blancmange.
And lots of thanks there to the ComSat Angels. Good to see them whacking that out still in fine style. And of course, earlier to the Sounds of the Opposition. Leaving them out this evening was Ted DeBono, the sound balance courtesy of Mike Megawatts Robinson, and the entire proceedings produced by Mr. Jeff Griffin. Next week in concert, a whole hour of Elvis Costello. But now, with the time coming up to 7:30, the VHF network reverts to Radio 2, while Radio 1 continues on the medium wave with Janice Long, and that is right after the news.
Radio 1. 7:30, Ian Parkinson reports.
And you were popping up on other shows, Steve, like Round Table. You used to be a regular guest on there, didn't
you? With Skinner, that's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pulling apart the new artists of the day.
We did indeed, and not all the pluggers actually took to us. And there was a Shelby unnamed promotion guy, who I can't say, actually, but we all know who he is in the business, and threatened to assault me. He actually held his fist to me outside and said, "You do that again, mate." And, you know, so much for fame.
Tom Bailey from the Thompson Twins, welcome to Roundtable.
Hi.
And hi also to Howard Jones, currently celebrating a number 2 hit in the charts.
Hello.
All right. A windy journey by Steve Blacknell today. So I'm told. Did you come here by bike, Steve?
Yes, thank you very much, Richard. Great to be here.
The Simple Minds, start us off.
Right, this is interesting, Steve. Have a listen to this. We've got a clip of you on Roundtable reviewing a comeback record from The Who in the early 80s. And you're being particularly critical here.
No, I just think that's awful. Watching Stardust last night and hearing My Generation coming over a radio, you know, in a car, and making me think, looking at dear old Keith Moon there, being angry and wonderful. That is not angry music.
I mean, 37-year-old men cannot be angry and teenage forever, though, can they? They have to sort of mature, do something different.
Right,
talking about that, isn't
there?
Yeah. I'm not surprised with you around.
Yeah. I don't even live with him. No, I don't know. That's on the phone. It's just hard. That was just awful. And as we said when we listened to it, just to me, we talk about production. I mean, there's just so lack of it. It just seems like they've just gone in there, do it quick, and clinical, horrible, sad.
But I mean, really, having a listen to that, even you're wincing a little bit. Did that come naturally to you? Because I guess you are being rather scathing.
Yeah, but there's no point in being on it if you're sitting on the fence. It didn't come naturally to me to be nasty, no.
Potentially, not so much nasty, but just honest.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Potentially, it is tricky, isn't it? Because you've come from the record industry, and all of a sudden, here you are with this product on radio, on television, but you had to do your job. So potentially, it could have landed you in hot water with a few of the other pluggers as well.
Well, it did, and also, because I came up through those 7 or 8 years in the record industry, all of a sudden, the pluggers are coming to me. Which was kind of weird because I was on breakfast television at the time, also doing the pop show every morning. I followed on from Dear Mike Smith, you know. So I did 4 years there. So basically, it was a very hard life for me, knowing these people and coming up with them. All of a sudden, I'm in a decision making process. Kind of weird.
Because you're both music lovers, and that was the way that you got into your broadcast careers.
Yeah.
Was it? I mean, be honest now. I know, Pete, that you've been very vocal in the past with, like, the showbiz side of Radio 1.
Great.
And you know...
My favourite.
What...
Bit of showbiz, eh? Dot off.
I know he's not going to hold back here.
No, he won't.
How did you find...
Tell you what, music lovers.
How did you find being around that?
What, around Radio 1?
The showbiz side of it, you know. All of a sudden, these guys that you've been on the ships with, they were going out and sort of opening supermarkets and doing Top of the Pops and what have you.
That's what we used to do on the ships.
But you did it reluctantly.
Yeah, on our weeks off. We used to be given all these gigs to go to and chuck records.
Do you think, though, that the ego side of it eventually overtook with one or two individuals?
I don't know. You'll have to ask them.
Yeah, he's sitting on the fence.
But I didn't, you see, I didn't ever want to be a DJ. I mean, I like records, like everybody else. I like music. But it was only being in America and not having a job, and somebody said, you know, go and tell them you know the Beatles, you know, and get on radio. And I remember going up to the guys at the station, this AM station. It was in Wichita, Kansas. And I said, you know, have you got any jobs for disc jockeys? And they said, no, no, no. I said, okay, can you tell me where the bus is so I can get back into town? Because these stations are always outside. He goes, hold on, are you from Boston? I said, no, I'm from England. Oh, England, wait a minute. You know, and that was it. He says, you know, have you ever worked? No, I never worked in radio. He said, we can teach a monkey to do this in 24 hours. Okay. And what he meant was operating the faders and, you know, putting the records on at the right speed. Well, I never actually managed that properly. Yeah. You know, I was always putting things on the wrong speed and swearing on air.
Well, that's what always terrified me, the technical side of it. The idea of doing that. And
I
still have nightmares about doing shows that don't work, you know, when I'm getting crashing all in.
Was it weird, Radio 1, you know, being based in Egton House and then having to sort of like walk through, you know, the corridor, you know, that long sort of bridge over to Broadcasting House and actually perform, for want of a better word, there in the old sort of continuity studio?
Well, you never did that, really. I mean, Egton House was sort of daytime, whatever, and then in the evening you come in about 9 and not walk down the corridor,
just go straight into Broadcasting House.
Yeah, and meet all the stars, you know. Yeah. Marvellous.
By the power invested in me, I swear to tell the truth. The whole truth. Not invited to.
This Saturday, In Concert comes from the Glastonbury Festival and stars Buddy Curtis and the Grasshoppers. And the House Martins. It's going to be a happy hour with the House Martins and Buddy Curtis this Saturday on In Concert, 6:30 on Radio 1.
Funny thing is, Pete, I mean, you remain part of the Radio 1 weekend schedule, you know, a fixture on it right through until 1986 with In Concert. It must have been strange because initially, of course, you were part of the Radio 1 DJ lineup, as we've talked about at the beginning of the programme, one of the originals. But then in the 70s and the 80s, presumably you were literally only going in, you know, you were introducing In Concert, of course, but going in once a week during the week and recording the intros and the outros and the trailers.
Sometimes, yeah, I did a load of sort of story of...
You did.
This and
I
that
mean,
and the other.
Island Record story. I particularly enjoyed
Jeff,
that.
Yeah, well, that was Jeff. You know,
was
Jeff
it nice Griffin. To still be part of Radio 1?
Of course, yeah.
Give Me Some Loving, as Spencer Davis quite rightly said, made it to number 2 in November 1966. Amongst the employees at the Island offices during that year was a young American, Kim Fowley, who was best known for his 1962 number 1 hit, Nut Rocker, in the guise of Bee Bumble and the Stingers. Chris Blackwell had a soft spot for that record because it was the first thing he'd heard when he arrived in England from Jamaica that same year. He was also fascinated by Fowley himself and offered him a job at 155 Oxford Street.
Live Aid from London with BBC TV and Radio 1.
Tell me about Live Aid, Steve.
Basically, what happened was I had a show in America called London Calling.
This was aside from your British television career, Radio 1 and what have you.
We came up with a show for MTV USA and went over there and sold it. And we did 18 of them in the end, one-hour things. And they went out to, I'm told, 23 million people. I mean, whether that's true or not, but it went down very well. And because of that, I was plucked by Mike Appleton, John Burroughs and team to be the chappie who would go on the Concorde with Phil Collins.
Listen, whose idea was this whole trip, this Philadelphia idea?
No idea.
No, it was... we thought if it could be done, wouldn't it be good to do it? And then we went into the logistics and we found out that it was possible. And then we had to... I mean, I didn't want to go just to America to play my own song, so I arranged... Eric Clapton's on tour out there, and so is Robert Plant. So I rang them up and said if I could play with them. So Give Me Something to Go For. And it's just nice to be involved in as much as possible, really. You know, I'm a lunatic, aren't I, really?
It's in a couple of books, but I do remember the day before Live Aid, ringing up my mother trying to impress her. And she said, what are you doing tomorrow, Stephen? And I said, well, I'm just off to Philadelphia with Phil Collins. We're getting on Concorde, and we're going to helicopter. And then I said, she said, how are you off for underwear? And so that sort of took the floss off it. But great day, yeah.
On next week's In Concert, you can hear the Bert Yanks Group and Richard and Linda Thompson. But now, with the time coming up to 7.30, Radio 1 and its medium-wave transmitters close down till 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, when we reopen with Tony Blackburn.
Pete Drummond.
Yes.
Steve Blacknell. As ever, it's a pleasure seeing you. And thank you very much for coming in here and sharing your vastly different, yet in some ways very similar experiences of being part of the nation's favourite BBC Radio 1. Nice to see you, chaps.